So where are you? I mean, there are some people who say the last time you ran for public office, you were sort of Tea Party-ish, but that you're not anymore. Is that right?
Well, I spent 8 years working for Bill Weld and Paul Cellucci, and
They are not.
was a
And
big
they're
fan
anything
of the
but that, right?
time I spent in that administration. I also spent several years serving as a member of my board of selectmen in my town, hometown of Swampscott. I bring what I would describe as a, and by the way, my mom is a Democrat and my dad's a Republican, so I've been listening to both sides of the political spectrum ever since I was a kid. And I think in some ways what I really bring to this is a pragmatism and a desire to create the kind of Massachusetts where everybody has the kind of opportunity that I had. I mean, I grew up in a great town. I grew up in Needham. I got a great education. My kids in Swampscott have gotten a great education. I really feel that more than anything, what we should be focused on at this point is making sure that we have an economy that works from one end of Massachusetts to the other, that we have great schools everywhere. It bothers me that for many people, their zip code defines whether or not their kids are going to get the kind of education they need to build a great life. And we have a lot of people who have done some really interesting things in neighborhood development and community building, and I'm not really sure we've leveraged them quite to the extent we should.
So how come a Republican, Bill Weld, who I thought was a very good man, and Paul Cellucci, how come Republicans can win in blue state Massachusetts?
I think part of the reason that folks have been successful in running for that office is I think people in Massachusetts like what I used to see at the dinner table in my house. They like the check and balance between Republicans and the governor's office and a Democratic-led legislature. They like the constructive friction, as I call it, that comes with that. I think they like the idea of competition and people holding each other accountable for their performance, which I think it's hard for one party to do. I mean, I have a lot of friends who are Democrats. Heck, I live in Massachusetts. But I think it's very hard for one party to hold itself accountable in many cases. And I think the great thing about having both teams on the field is if it works the way it's supposed to, you get the best of both.
I asked you why you should be governor. Now tell me why Martha Coakley shouldn't be governor.
Well, I've known Martha for many years. And I'm a big fan of the Attorney General, and I admire the fact that she's dedicated her professional career to public service. But I think more than anything, at this point in time, with jobs as the number one issue on everybody's mind, it would be better to have somebody in the governor's office who had private sector and public sector experience and who was a manager and a leader as opposed to somebody who's been a career prosecutor. I certainly think that the work that Martha's done as Attorney General and the work she's done in her career is to be commended. But I really believe the best training for the job of governor in Massachusetts at this point in time is to be somebody who's, you know, been on both sides of the field and can really focus on the things we need to be doing to create jobs and grow the economy.
Is Martha Coakley a Deval Patrick type? How is Deval Patrick done?
Well, I think the I ran against the governor 4 years ago, and I thought he ran a great race, and I have nothing but the utmost respect for him. But I've been disappointed, as I think many people have, by the rollout of the healthcare connector, for example, which the governor has many appointments on that board, and so does the attorney general, by the way, has three appointments on that board for the health connector. And that, you know, Massachusetts went from having the best healthcare website in the country to having the worst healthcare website in the country, and it's still not fixed. And I've been saying for several weeks now that I would like the Attorney General and the Governor, as the two leaders who have the most number of seats on that board, to come out and make clear to the public whether or not this thing's going to work when it gets launched for the second time in November. I also don't understand to this day why, when it's such a compelling lawsuit had been filed against our child welfare agencies, the Governor and the Attorney General, rather than acknowledging the deficiencies in the child welfare system that were raised by that lawsuit, which, by the way, was filed in 2010, chose to fight that lawsuit. And in the end, some real tragedies came about as a result of, I would argue, not taking care of some of the issues that were raised in that original brief. So I guess I would say it's a mixed record, but I certainly admired the the campaign the governor ran back in 2010. I was very impressed with him.
And Charlie Baker, you're going to debate Martha Coakley tonight. And what are the things you have
to... That'll be along with three other people, right?
What are the things you have to avoid doing? You know, in New York State, we had, you know, somebody come on over to Hillary Clinton and appear to be threatening. And, you know, the press all said, you know, you can't do that when you're debating a woman. What would you say? You have a real tone of respectfulness right here. Is that what you're going to do tonight?
Oh, I would like to think that I was raised right by my mom and dad, and that my... You know, my parents always used to say, it's okay, son, to be tough on the issues, but you got to be soft on the people.
Sure.
And I would hope that I can continue to live up to that standard that my parents set for me. And when I think about opportunities like tonight to address the voters with the other candidates, my goal is going to be to focus on why I think I'm the right person for the job at this point in time. So I'm going to talk about some of the stuff you and I have been talking about here on the phone.
What about the relationship between, quote, Western Massachusetts and the rest of the state? How does that work? You know, every time I open the paper, somebody's saying about we're still paying for the big dig in Western Massachusetts, and yet they're raising our tolls again. How do you deal with that?
Well, I think the best thing we can do to deal with questions like that is to make sure that we have plans and strategies in place across the Commonwealth that are designed to grow the economy and create the kinds of schools you'd want to send your kids to and build the sort of communities that you believe that the you know tomorrow's going to be better than today. And for me, that means building on the strengths that each part of Massachusetts already has. And one of the things I've said, based on a number of the visits I've made to the greater Springfield area, and frankly, all the way, in many cases, out to the Pittsfield area as well, is there's a lot of manufacturing going on out there. And the big thing I hear from many of the, and they're smaller manufacturers, but the big thing I hear from most of them is not the cost of this or the cost of that. What I hear from them is that they simply can't find enough skilled people to fill the jobs they've got. And in some cases, we're talking about hundreds of jobs, and over time, it's going to be thousands of jobs. And I would hate to see us lose opportunities to grow the existing employment base we already have in some of these areas because we can't create the kinds of opportunities for people to get the skills they need to take those jobs. And that, to me, means doing things like creating a much more significant footprint with respect to career and technical schools and making sure that we're doing the kinds of things that we need to do to get kids the 1 and 2 year associate degrees coming out of those career and technical schools they need to take some of these jobs in the aerospace and the engines and the aircraft and the plastics business, all of which seem to have pretty successful footprints out in that area that we aren't necessarily as focused on as we need to be. The other thing I would say is we should be as aggressive as we can be, and I said I wanted to do this with every mayor in Massachusetts. Sit down with those mayors and come up with the two or three things that are really going to move the needle in their community, and then create the plan and both sides sign up for that and make kind of a public declaration that this is what we're going to get done over the course of the next 4 years to move your community, our community, forward. And to me, that would create a sort of a focus and an urgency to that I think we need if we're really going to get some of this stuff done.
Charlie Baker, one last question here. We are experiencing a scourge of heroin addiction in not only this state but others. What do you want to do about it?
Well, first of all, I agree. And secondly, I spent a fair amount of time talking to people across the addiction, the healthcare, and the law enforcement community about this. And I would say a bunch of things. The first is we have to think differently about the way we prescribe pain medication. I mean, 66% of everybody who gets admitted to a hospital ends up with an opiate prescription before they leave. I think in both healthcare and in dentistry, we need to think a little differently about how we use these kinds of medications because there are real consequences for people that I think in some cases have been unappreciated up until now. I also think we need to get 100% of the Commonwealth clinicians who prescribe using the state's drug monitoring website so that people really know how many prescriptions associated with a lot of these pain meds people have, because the pain meds have clearly become, based on the research I've done, sort of the front door to the heroin problem. And then on the back end, so that's kind of my thoughts about the front end. And on the back end, we need to come up with, and I supported what was proposed earlier this year by the administration and by the legislature to expand our bed capacity on this. But we also need to think differently about the way we handle this stuff on a go-forward basis for people in recovery, because it's very clear to me that this is like having diabetes or some other chronic condition. It's the sort of thing where you're going to need to keep people sort of involved in treatment for a very long period of time to be successful, because this isn't the kind of thing where, you know, 3 weeks and you're done. I mean, this is much more of an ongoing issue for people. And I also think we should be working a little harder to take advantage of some of the new medications that have been developed that are designed not just to sort of deaden this stuff out, but to really relieve the actual activity associated with using some of these opiates. I mean, some of the success people have had with new medications as part of reentry programs for people coming out of prison have turned out to be pretty effective ways to keep them drug-free after they leave, after they serve their time. And I think there's an opportunity there that we need to pursue.